OK, bonjour tout le monde. Bienvenue à Goodman Cancer Center, à McGill. Et bienvenue aussi, il y a des gens qui regardent notre processus sur l'Internet. Et bonjour à tout le monde sur le web. Thanks for coming. This is the start of a consultation process by the Terry Fox Cancer Research Institute, looking into the program project grants. And it's a true consultation. There's nothing pre-decided about this. And so we're really interested in hearing your comments. This is the first meeting. I'll tell you a bit in a minute about what we're going to do. I'd like to just recognize a couple of people in the audience. First of all, Daryl Fox. Daryl, of course, is Terry's brother. And Daryl has been, I think, from the very beginning of the Terry Fox Institute and the Terry Fox Foundation, Daryl's been a strong and important member, a major supporter of research. And Daryl, I'd personally like to thank you for all the years of work and effort you've put in, I think it's made a big difference. In addition, there are some potential or current partner organizations represented, EXAM, the CHR Institute of Cancer Research. I know its scientific director, who's the second greatest scientific director of the Cancer Institute, is currently getting sunburned in Barbados at a very important meeting, so she's not here. But ProCure is supposed to be represented. I'm looking. There she is. As our Nova Scotia representative, did she make it? Not yet. Anyway, so those of you who are watching online, welcome as well. We're being telecast. And will this be available for rebroadcast? Can people watch it? Yes, it will be available to watch again if you want to see yourself asking a question. Also, written comments are highly welcome. And I'll show you at the end the email address, but it's ppg@tfri, Terry Fox Research Institute, .ca. So, and I'll put that up at the end. But you're welcome to send comments. So, we want to talk about the scope, the value and direction of the current Terry Fox Program Project Grant Program. And most important, get information from you about the process. This is the online, you're here, so I guess you don't need this, and I expect people that are watching don't need this, but there is the online address if anyone else wants to join. This process is being run, or at least managed, by an interesting group of individuals, a kind of ad hoc committee to look at the consultation program, look at the program itself, and make recommendations. And if I can start at this end, Rebecca Auer is from Ottawa. She's a clinical oncologist, and I guess she has some link to John Bell's program, but otherwise she has other interests, and she's a new investigator. Vic Ling, you all know, and you'll be hearing from in a few minutes. Carol Cass is the head of the Cross Cancer Institute. She used to be. She actually owns the Cross Cancer Institute. She's been a long-time basic cancer researcher, and we've known each other for years. The same can be said for the young Jerry Johnston over there in the end, who has made us all believe that yeast do get cancer. And he's at Halifax, at Dalhousie University, and has been a long-time important member in the planning of the cancer research agenda in Canada. And of course, Stephen Hurst, who's not really on the committee, but he does most of the work of the committee. So anyway, and Kelly is at the back, standing guard at the door. Anyway, so that's the group. And we're missing a couple of people. Anne-Marie Mesmasson, I think, has a critical meeting today, and she's not here. Frank Sicari in Toronto could not make it today. And Jerome Yates, is the former head of the American Cancer Society, and he's at Buffalo. He could not make it here today either. So the committee, as I said, what we did was we looked at the current status of the program project grants, and we thought about, well, what are things we should ask you to help advise on? And we organized the process, and we plan to participate in it, and ultimately we will prepare a report that will be given mid-February to the Terry Fox Research Institute and its executive. So the process, today's the first meeting in Montreal. We go to Toronto tomorrow, and then next week to Vancouver to have similar events taking place. We will then review the comments that you make, by the way, the people online can send questions in on the web, and they will be monitored, and when we get to the question and discussion period, we will include those in the discussion. So we will review the comments and develop this report. By March, this will go to the Terry Fox executive. A revised RFA will be prepared and presented in April, which will then be posted. And I think letters of intent are due at the beginning of July. And that's more or less the usual pattern. I should say that I don't think there's anyone. I know there's at least one application in this year from Quebec, but I don't think they're represented here today. In the current process, this has nothing to do with the current process. The current process will be, as it has been, reviewed by a committee organized by CIHR. I mean, I should have added this at the beginning. Part of the reason for this discussion is that the Terry Fox Research Institute is repatriating the whole program project grant process. In the past, it was reviewed by the National Cancer Institute of Canada and Canadian Cancer Society, and then in partnership with CIHR, the review process was done through CIHR. Starting next year, the review process will be done by Terry Fox, and that's what we want to help consult you with you on. But the current program, Jerry Johnstone chairs the review committee of the current applications through the CIHR. Okay, so the agenda is, I think I've used up my whole 10 minutes, pretty much. Vic is going to talk in a minute. And then we're going to hear from three programs that are currently, three program project grants, Rusty, Bill Muller, and then Jean-Simon Diallo from Ottawa will talk about the John Bell-led project. Dr. Sinet was not able to join us today. And then we're going to have four discussions on four sets of topics, and we'll put the list that they were all in the discussion paper that many of you received. We'll put that list up as we have the discussion. Okay, my last thing I want to say before Vic takes over is to give you just a background on how much impact the Terry Fox Foundation and its initiatives have had. Since it started in the 80s, $407 million have been provided for cancer research, of which almost 80% is for research. Program project grants have been a major component of that, with some funds for new investigators and smaller amounts for career awards and training grants. Now the new initiative, so the program project grant has been going since the 80s. Now in the last few years, last four and a half years, The new translational research initiative has started, and so far 47 million have been invested in that, and then some capacity building and so on. So that's the investment. Virtually all the money that comes into Terry Fox goes into research. I think that's one of the powers of the organization. Okay, I think I'll stop there. I'll be back in a second, but Vic, our fearless leader, I think has a few words and discussions about what we're up to.
So it's a real delight to be here, and I just want to give a little bit of background on the Terry Fox Research Institute, so that everybody is on the same page, as well as maybe what we're here today for. So I need to put my presentation on here. Maybe it's... Do I have to close this? Okay.
Leave it to a surgeon to know what to do. Well, that's what you want a surgeon to be able to
very
take
good.
Control.
Yeah, thank you. So why are we here? Well, as Phil has already mentioned, we are entrusted to oversee the PPG portfolio starting next year. And so this has been a very long-standing program, initially with NCIC, as Phil mentioned, and then the CCS, and then more recently CIHR. So we're beginning our taking over our responsibility starting next year's competition. And we recognize that a lot has changed in the last 3 decades. And so we want to involve you, and as we go across the country, people in Toronto, and in Vancouver, and also anybody who is viewing the telecast and sending in written comments as to which is the most optimal way of managing this particular portfolio. And the other thing is that we, at the Terry Fox Research Institute, we were created after a scientific consultation, and this was, as Phil said, about 5 years ago. And so as part of our culture, we believe in partnership, we believe in collaboration. So we really want to look for people in the audience here who may want to partner, especially if you're interested in this program and you may wish to partner on this program. And our focus, obviously, is to listen. We want to learn as much as we can from everybody's experiences and then eventually to act. So what we hope to accomplish, of course, is this open consultation. We'll share some information about the program itself, discuss the impact of the program, and we'll hear from some of the people who have held the PPGs, who have really had a long history of excellence, and they will want to focus on a key issue that would make the program better. So just very briefly to let you know, the PPG, as Phil had mentioned, represent a little bit more than 50% of the investment of the Terry Fox Foundation. The foundation invests around about $28 million per year of its own money, and then we were able to garner another $4 million from partnership. So the $14.5 million represent about half of the investment of the foundation. So this consultation isn't to reduce the investment, it's really as to how to make the best use of the money that is currently available. And as you know, there are 13 projects currently. The translational project that was started about 5 years ago, currently there are 9 projects, and the foundation has committed $10 million a year on that. And some of you are involved in the Pan-Canadian project. And the translational project is very collaborative. It's Pan-Canadian. It's business plan-driven, milestone-driven, and it's highly managed research program. And then we have the new investigator award that was started a couple of years ago. And currently we have 10 awardees. Rebecca is one of our stellar awardees, and we think that's going very well. The whole idea of the New Investigator Award is for new investigator to be mentored by a PPG, by a Terry Fox PPG or translational project. And then we have other partnership with regional funder. And then there's also some international run, international project. And just to have a look at the history of this, we have record, but it was started even earlier, but we're record from 94 to 2013. During that time, there are 27 PPG teams, $290 million invested, and you can see the distribution across the country. Then currently, there are 13 PPG grants, and five of them are first time, and there are eight renewals of the 13, and this is $14.5 million per annum. And you can see the majority of the grants are only been over one time, and there are two grants have been renewed seven times. And this just gives you a listing. I don't expect everybody to read this, but just give you a feeling for the kind of project that is supported. There are five, currently, there are five new PPGs on ultrasound, tumor heterogeneity, form foster genetics, childhood leukemia, and oncometabolism. And we'll hear a little bit of that later on. And then there are eight renewals in the oncolytic virus. There are prostate, lymphoma, metastatic breast cancer, we hear about that, vascular development, molecular cellular differentiation, and hypoxia. So the scope of the program, and we want your input, currently the RFA says the scope of the program is to explore new frontiers in cure-oriented research that is breakthrough and transformative biomedical translational research, providing new knowledge which may form the basis for innovative cancer diagnosis or treatment. So that's the current RFA. So we would like to hear from you and say, are there other areas that should be within the scope, or is this scope define what you think is the best way for this program to be run? Should there be some targeting of specific area to be introduced? How should the program itself be successes be evaluated? And the other perspective is, we call it New Frontiers Program Projects. And so what is new? What are the new frontiers? To go boldly where no man had gone before? Is that the question? Is that what we're doing? And so we'd like to know and get your opinion, where are the new frontiers in cancer research? And then the program design, currently, the new application, it's given up to 3 years at up to $750,000 per annum of Terry Fox money, but starting this year, the applicant can enrich that and extend it more than $750,000 per year by getting other partners to promise to fund that project. So it could enrich it up to another matching the $750,000, so it could be $1.5 million for new application. The renewals currently is up to 5 years and $1.5 million per annum, and again, enrichment. And so what we would like to get your opinion on are the assumption behind the difference between new application and renewal. Is it valid? Is it, should we sort of skew toward the renewal as being a better risk, a better investment, or should we be skewing more to a new application? Should there be... The maximum amount, should it be increased or decreased, and so on. So these are the kind of questions we'd like to get your opinion on. And finally, as Phil and Murray mentioned, we're very interested in hearing your opinion about the process itself. And so there are essentially three major steps. There's the LOI, the submission, and then the steering committee will review that, and then a small number of these LOI will be selected for four applications, and these four applications will then be reviewed, and again, a number will be site visited, and then the result of the site visit and the peer review will then be provided back to the steering committee for the final ranking, and eventually for support by the Terry Fox Foundation. So this is currently the way it is, and we would like to hear from you whether this is still the appropriate process for the review or not. And finally, just to wrap this up, you know, the reason we're doing this is because we really want to realize Terry's dream. Terry's, of course, want to make a really big difference when he cure cancer. And he showed that by his own vision, selfless determination, and courage. And we hope that, you know, once the Terry Fox Research Institute take over this program, we can set an example for really effective cancer research. So I'll give the podium back to Phil and to carry on with this process.
Thanks, Vic. I don't know if I need my, and the winner is, Frank Sicari is online watching the webcast. Hi, Frank. He's a member of our committee, a basic scientist at Sinai. I don't think I need the rest of my slides. Where in the hell do I go for this? I don't think I need the rest of my slides. I think, but we will need Rusty's talk. So I think Vic has laid out pretty much what the goals of this are, and these four areas of discussion. And I think we'll proceed towards that. But we would. There are three current program project grants in Quebec. All three are in Montreal. Two of them here at the Goodman, with some members of the Lady Davis Institute, and one at Saint-Justine. The one Dr. Sinnett at the Saint-Justine will not be presenting. But as Ottawa is closer to Montreal than it is to Toronto, we will hear from John Bell's project as well. So, Rusty, just 5 minutes, just to give a sense of what a current program project grant looks like. If you'd be, are you wired?
I'm wired.
There you go. You'll have to put, maybe you'll, see, I'm a Mac person.
Yeah, me too, so that's okay.
So I don't even know where to look on a PC for, you. That's better than me. There you go. There you go. All right.
There you go. Thank you, Phil. Let me get out of here. Well, it's a real pleasure to speak with you today and represent the Oncometabolism team, which is one of the newer program project groups here at the Goodman Cancer Center. And again, I'd like to thank the Terry Fox Research Institute for their support for our team and the other teams. I remember when I think it was five, when my dad took me out to see Terry run through our neighborhood in Ottawa when I lived there, and he's always been a very inspirational figure for me personally. So it's nice to see the continuing support now as an adult here doing research. So I basically want to highlight just a few things that I'm going to touch on today in the brief time that I have to discuss what our team does and where we fit into this idea of new frontiers in cancer research, and then some of our, I guess, opinions of our group of how we would view the process going forward for the renewal process for this program. So basically, where we come in is that we're a relatively new group. We were funded, as Victor Ling mentioned, in the cohort in 2011 as one of these three-year grants. And we are the Oncometabolism team. And really, what we're trying to think of, or position ourselves as one of these new frontiers in cancer research. So one of the common concepts in terms of the model of the hallmarks of cancer are these different hallmarks of cancer which actually drive the tumorigenic processes. So many of these are commonly thought of as evading apoptosis, evading cell death, angiogenesis, deregulated cell growth. But what's emerging as one of these new concepts is that underwriting, sort of like writing the check for all of these processes, is the deregulation of cellular energetics. So the generation of enough energy to support the process of unrestricted cell growth. And so our particular group has really been at the forefront of trying to drive this type of research and looking at altered metabolism in cancer. And our hope is that by researching this, we're taking a multidisciplinary approach from genomics to metabolomics in order to look at the role of deregulated metabolism in both the development of cancer and the progression of cancer, with an eye and a focus on investigating potential for metabolic targeting of cancer as a new therapeutic model. So I just want to highlight our team because really this is a sort of a pan-Montreal team. We have two main groups that compose this team, one the large group at the Goodman Cancer Research Center, and as well a group at the Siegel Cancer Center, Lady Davis Research Institute, which is really broken down into five essential teams, each focusing on different aspects of metabolism and cancer. And we have some of our investigators in the audience today, Nicole Boschman, which I'm a partner with on our work on AMP kinase, Arnim Pose, and I are also partners on another team. We have our partner team between Naum Sonnenberg and Michael Pollack and Ivan Topisirovich at the Lady Davis. Michel Tremblay, of course, is looking at phosphatases and metabolism in our team. And finally, we have a team sort of a genomics and transcriptomics team with Judy St-Pierre, who's also in the audience today, and Vincent Giguère. And really what ties us all together is the building of a core facility that really supports this type of research, and that's our metabolomics core facility. And our manager, Dinah Avazonis, is in the audience with us today. So really, why we believe that our approach is innovative as part of a new frontier is because we're actually assembling a unique and comprehensive collection of expertise in both metabolism and genomics and cancer biology, and then centering this scientific expertise around a unique core facility, and that's our metabolomics core facility, which is specifically designed to address the issue of altered metabolism in cancer. So what we feel is that the strength of our program, and really has been supported by the Terry Fox Research Institute program project grant, is bringing together these basic scientists here at the Goodman at the Siegel Cancer Center, translational and clinical experts, in particular working in combination with Michael Pollack at the Lady Davis Research Institute, and actually involving the training of highly qualified personnel, particularly in our core facility, to support this whole endeavor. We think we offer a unique opportunity for trainees, both students and postdocs, who really don't have the opportunity anywhere else in the world, except for a few centers perhaps in the United States and Europe, to gain this type of expertise in metabolism research. And even though we're a relatively new team, we were funded in 2011. Really, we've been assembling elements of this team since, I think, Michel would say, about mid-2005. I was recruited to McGill University in 2008, along with Julie St-Pierre. But in that time, since 2011, we've built up a program that has already shown significant process. Since we were funded in 2011, we've had 13 papers by the group in very specific journals to the cancer metabolism field, such as cell metabolism, PNAS, and cancer research. So we feel that we've just begun to sort of crest into our productivity phase with this team. How we approach our studies is really a circular process, I would say. Not that we're chasing our tails in a circular process, but it's that our questions and our analysis feeds new questions and the biology that we're studying. So essentially what we do is we start up here with our biological questions, and in particular focusing on model systems, our mouse model systems. We do a considerable amount of work with the breast cancer group, as Dr. Muller will mention in a few minutes, but as well cancer cell models, as well as clinical samples and protocols. And then again, using this unique metabolomic core facility, we actually analyze the metabolic profile of cancer cells, tissues, and clinical samples, and combine this with cutting-edge data analysis and systems integration so we can actually understand what is the metabolic breakdown of tumor systems and tumor cells, and then this feeds new questions in biology. And so by our multi-pronged approach with multiple teams centered around this core facility, we're sort of peeling back layers of signal transduction and metabolic regulation that is underscored in different types of cancer. Now you can imagine this is a very complex process. So going around the circle allows us to interrogate what changes in metabolism are happening in any given time, and depending on different types of tumor mutations. So really, as I mentioned, we feel that the strength of our funding from the Terry Fox Research Institute really has been in assembling this team and allowing us to build this very unique core facility, which is unique certainly in Canada and throughout the world. Why it's unique is because this is the one metabolomics facility in Canada dedicated to studying the cancer process. There are other groups in Canada, particularly David Wishart, who's a metabolomics expert at the University of Alberta. But we have specifically harnessed this technology to answer questions regarding cancer. And so Around this technology, we've assembled biologists, chemists, and statisticians who really help us analyze the data properly. We've been fortunate through funding both from the Fraser Institute and as well the CFI to get the cutting-edge instrumentation to allow us to do this work. And we've surrounded the core with professional management, including our facility manager, Dinah, who has over 15 years of experience coming from industry to help us with metabolomics, and dedicated technicians to allow us to do this work. So just an idea, we have platforms for studying the bioenergetic profiling of cancer cells. This is a Sifu horse platform. This allows us to analyze energetic differences in cancer cells. It's amenable to high-throughput sequencing, high-throughput analysis, so certainly in terms of genome-wide sequencing, genome-wide screening, and as well drug screening. This is a very nice platform. The core of everything is around this, our metabolomic profiling platform, which allows us to do both targeted and untargeted metabolite analysis of cancer cells and tumor samples. And, of course, this would be nothing if we didn't have the ability to synthesize this information through bioinformatics, so we can integrate the data sets. You know, we have lots of information about the genomics of tumors, and now we're starting to link this with metabolic changes in tumors. And we feel that this combining of the information will allow us to sort of peel back what's going on in the cancer process. So just that's essentially our team as it stands today, about almost two years into our funding mandate from the Terry Fox Research Institute. I'm just going to share with you a couple bullet points of what we feel as a team are important items to go forward with in terms of the consultation process. And I think, Victor, you did nicely explain a lot of these things. So I think we're on the same page, and it'll be an interesting discussion. We really feel that the main focus of the program project group really has to have a strong fundamental anchoring in the basic medical research process with clear cancer relevance and potential for translation. And what I mean by this is that if we just look back at the last 5 or 6 years in the field of metabolism research, so several groups in the United States did widespread screening analysis, genomic screening analysis of tumor types. And what they actually reviewed, some of these analysis revealed, particularly in glioblastoma, was the prevalence of mutations in metabolic genes associated with cancer. So this is particularly these mutations in isocitrate dehydrogenase, or IDH1, associated with both glioblastoma and now AML. And the way that you can actually interrogate the role of these metabolic enzymes in the tumorigenic process is through basic research linking to our core facility, metabolomics. So we feel that this offers a potential unique avenue to find out unique enzymes or processes in the tumorigenic process, but we need to understand the framework in which we're working in. So basic medical research is something that we feel very strongly as being a tenet of this program. In terms of the review process, the review structure, we feel that consistency and transparency, above all, is probably the most important thing to us. So again, as Victor mentioned, teams moving past the LOI stage, the importance of site visits to essentially validate the functionality of teams, the ability of the core facilities to answer questions, I think is very important. And as well, consistency of the actual reviewing team. So I think it's important, or we think it's important, that every team is evaluated by a consistent review team so that you're not comparing apples and oranges with different people behind the desk. Again, the core of our research program is our metabolomics core facility. So we feel that one of the unique opportunities of the Terry Fox New Frontiers Program Projects Grant is to recognize the added value of these core facilities. We spent almost 5 years building this unique core facility for studying metabolism and cancer. We feel that this offers an opportunity not just to build this type of research in Canada, but as well to reach outside in both nationally and internationally, which is what we've started to do at this point. This allows us an anchor internationally in cancer research, which I think is very important. And then, again, just a little bit of an idea about the levels of funding, about team size and funding. We agree, Victor, with your assessment about, you know, letting new teams in the door with smaller grants. That's what's gotten us on the board, and we're very thankful for it, and it's allowed us to elevate our team to the point where we are today. But we also think that there may be something we have to consider in terms of both established teams, where the funding envelope can increase and the length of funding can increase, but as well the idea of more comprehensive cancer teams, or super teams, you might want to call it, where the funding envelope may be a little bit larger, This may be appropriate for specific areas of research, such as very animal model intensive programs, for example. So that's my 5 minutes plus, and I'd like to thank you for your attention.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Any questions from anyone, including the review team? Jerry.
Yep. It's clear that this is where a core facility is the glue that brings everybody together.
Uh-huh.
And you mentioned, I mean, clearly the Terry Fox funds did not build that. That was presumably here for CFI and other ways. So can you tell me how the, I guess I'm just asking to give you some insight into how the Terry Fox Award made things happen, or did it just kind of help what was already happening?
It's a very good point. I think what we were able to do, in particular the efforts of Michel Tremblay, getting initial funding to help build our program, McGill University to allow the recruitment of people like myself and Julie, experts in this targeted area, were fundamental bringing this team together at its infancy. We are fortunate because of with CFI to be able to fund large portions of the equipment. But that got us to one point. The backstory of all this is that we've been able to build our group to a certain size, and what the Terry Fox Program Project Grant has allowed us to do is to expand and the scope of our research to fund the highly qualified personnel within the core facility to really allow us to build it solidly. So when we started out our core facility, we had enough funding through CFI for Dinar, our manager, and one technician. And what we always ran up to is our bottlenecks in the processing, specifically for our own group. We didn't have the manpower to be able to run through the amount of analysis that we needed to do. With the program project grant, we've been able to hire two more people, which has allowed us to meet the capacity of our group and has allowed us to expand beyond. So we have collaborations throughout Montreal. Have collaborations with people in Vancouver and Toronto who come and use our facility specifically. And if we didn't have the support of the Terry Fox, we wouldn't be able to take those extra research in and to drive those programs. So really what I think is that our group was building at its own extent, but really without the support of the Terry Fox Program Project Grant, we wouldn't be where we are today. And that's a simple fact, safe to say.
That was my question, actually. One of the kind of subtexts of Terry Fox is a kind of pan-Canadian nature, maybe more in the other program, but nonetheless. So you use your core to collaborate with it. So does that result in publications with groups outside, or will it?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you take, for an example, myself. So the way that our model has been right now in running the facility is, we collaborate actively with people of interesting projects. So particularly, I have a collaborative project with Paul Sorensen from the BC Cancer Agency, which is now his paper is under review. Mark Minden's group in Toronto, we started an active collaboration with all of their clinical samples in AML and CML. They don't have the capacity in Toronto, and we have the capacity here and the expertise to do the analysis. So it's a very nice system in which we can actually work actively with these other groups. I have active research with people in Dallas, in St. Louis, in Boston. These are people who want to work with us, and I think everyone in our group has these types of links. I know Julie has a lot of collaborators outside of Montreal and Canada and the United States as well.
Yeah. Carol?
Just one quick question.
Sure.
So your core facility is considered a collaborative facility as opposed to a user fee.
So that's actually good, because right now we're in, we've been at the building phase of our core facility. So everything that we've been doing up to this point has been collaborative. And it's been important for us, as for our team grant, is not to be able, not to dilute the facility by selling it at this point. I think as we move forward and we're able to support both our group and outside of collaborators, that's a good self-funding model to continue that. But as of now, it's really our group, the Goodman Cancer Center, and outside collaborators working with our team.
If I want to use it, I organize to collaborate with
you. You can always give me a call.
Project of mutual interest.
Absolutely, yep. And this has worked very well with other groups.
Okay.
I think we probably better move on. I would like to point out that under the review, the consistency of the reviewing teams, would you bring that back up when we come to that section of the discussion? I think that is worth some. We've been thinking about that, and I think we could use some discussion around that. Okay, the next one is Bill. William Muller.
I don't think I need a microphone. Everybody can hear?
It's for the web.
Before we start talking is around instructions to guys not to talk about their own projects or those ones that important.
You mean in the audience? Yeah, I'll put those slides. Yeah, I'll get Kelly to help me put it back up. Or I'll get Rebecca to help me put it back up.
Well, firstly, I'd like to thank the committee for coming by to ask for our advice, and I really like to thank Terry Fox for the continued support of our program, which was initially initiated in 2006. And the principal investigator at that time was Morag Park. And since that point, we had one successful renewal in 2009, and I took over as principal investigator because Morag basically became director of the Cancer Center. Now, the focus of our program is really to understand the molecular events involved in metastatic progression and understand the targets involved using preclinical models of breast cancer. And it comprises really a number of core investigators, myself, Vincent Jaguer, Michael Hallett, our bioinformatics expert, Morag Park, Peter Siegel, and just recently through the aegis of the Terry Fox new investigator initiative, we had Dr. Luke McCaffrey recently recruited to our team. And again, our focus is really looking at preclinical models and understanding the molecular events in basically understanding breast cancer, heterogeneity, progression, and metastasis. So basically, funding for this particular program project has enabled us to really use animal models, which I think from a new investigator award from Terry Fox, I got awarded in 1989 and initiated some 25 years ago, and has really been instrumental in establishing some of the best transgenic models of human breast cancer. And we've used these models to really elucidate the importance of various signaling pathways and mammary tumor progression. And in collaboration with Morag Park and others, we've went on to clinically validate the importance of these molecular events in human clinical material. And it's really a iterative process where candidate discovery goes to clinical validation, and that tells us something that we in turn can really test in our animal model system. So like the metabolic program project, it really is a process of going through one model system to another and trying to create a comprehensive understanding of the molecular events involved in breast cancer progression. Now, another feature of the program project is that it's really created a multidisciplinary training environment that exposes trainees to new methodologies, expertise, and perspectives, since we have such a diverse and, I think, comprehensive sort of analysis of the role of these genetic events in breast cancer progression. Now, the impact of the program project has been enormous, and years since we've renewed this particular, we have 23 publications in very prestigious journals that basically encompass the whole area of breast cancer research. In addition, on top of that, because of the core facilities have enabled us to use and generate further publications through the core facilities supported by the Terry Fox. It has also led to, I think, the training of a number of trainees that have been instrumental in the progression of this grant, and the listing of that is shown right here. And as you can see, there's been a tremendous training of both postdocs, students, as well as technicians and research associates throughout this program project. So it really has, I think, an additional added benefit in allowing the training of these individuals through the Terry Fox initiative. Now, another important point to be made is that the Terry Fox Frontiers Program project grants has enabled us really to establish key core facilities that really allow innovation. And in fact, many of the techniques like laser capture, microdissection, have been instrumental in allowing elucidating the molecular events within the stroma and the epithelia, which control mammary gland tumor progression. And all of this has been enabled us to actually really add benefit to the mouse model systems. Another important core facility that is instrumental within the Terry Fox program project has been the bioinformatic core. And through this, we've actually compended a huge set of human clinical human subjects as well as mouse models, and have the capacity of actually comparing these signatures from mouse to human and back and forth. And this has really allowed us to actually basically generate signatures which predict breast cancer outcomes. So again, this particular core is managed by the Mike Hallett, our bioinformatic consultant, and really has been instrumental in integrating with various projects throughout the program. Now, what we think, and as Rusty alluded to, is that, again, the program project should maintain a very strong focus supporting basic biomedical research with clear cancer relevance and potential for translation. We believe that current review structure, including site visit, is an ideal forum for actually examining these teams. And one committee that visits all teams or a component of that team would ensure consistency in the review process. We believe that the cores are actually fundamental to the success of these program projects, and that the Terry Fox really provides budgets that are key for the preservation of these core programs. We support the notion that new teams should be recruited with a three-year term at around a $750K cap, but offer the perspective of renewals depending on the size and nature of the research program to have a sliding scale of 1 to 1.5 million years for 5 years for renewal applications. So as it stands, I believe this Terry Fox program really has been instrumental in allowing and expanding our current research in the molecular events of breast cancer progression.
Hey, that was really 5 minutes.
Questions? Jerry?
You've been through the renewal process. So you've
Correct.
Gone from kind of the initial award to the next one up. And I'm curious what, and this isn't a loaded question, but what going to that higher amount, other than the obvious that you've got more money, what did it allow anything specific to happen other than just more of the same? Or
it was basically allowed expansion of some of our core programs, particularly the bioinformatics, where we really could drill into some of the questions that came up from some of the model system data and the human data. So that was really pivotal in allowing the expansion, as well as the expansion of the animal models themselves, which, as you know, are very, very costly. So that enabled us a lot more flexibility in terms of crossing different crosses that were initiated and getting a lot more bang for our initial investment. In addition, with the new investigator award, we were allowed to integrate Luke McCaffrey into our program, and that added an additional dimension of cell polarity and its role in breast cancer progression. And further than that, we were also thinking of expanding our core to have essentially a mouse translational component in the next renewal, where we could actually test these particular targets as therapeutics in these mouse models, so really use them as preclinical models for breast cancer treatment.
You touched on it. Let me just ask you to expand a little bit. The fact that new investigators can be aligned with these programs.
Correct.
What I mean, that has had a really, I mean, for you, from your perspective, that's had a really positive effect on.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, with the inclusion of Luke, it's enabled us to, again, explore another dimension of the breast cancer problem, which is how epithelial polarity influences metastatic progression. He's added the expertise of cell biology and imaging, which was lacking from the previous application. So it was really added value to have this new investigator recruited to our group. And it enabled us to also mentor him, as Rebecca probably can testify, having senior investigators looking after junior investigators and ensuring they're on their career path. I think it's another added benefit of having this Terry Fox program in place.
Carol.
We're only doing, I think, three new investigator awards per year. Should we be doing more?
Well, I think that depends on the scope of the program and the monetary resources you have available. In the ideal circumstances, of course, but under the scope of your current funding situation, I think you're limited to what you can actually support.
But you highlighted it as a particularly important.
In our case, it was a very.
Of your program.
In our case, it definitely was.
Yeah.
Can I ask the? I was away when Luke was recruited, but did the potential of having a new investigator, did that play any role in his recruitment? Or I wasn't here, so I don't
know. Yeah, absolutely. I would think that was one of the major factors. First of all, it really integrated them within the team environment, which, you know, coming in as a new investigator, particularly in this hostile granting environment, having people there that can actually kind of shepherd you through that process is, I think, instrumental. I know when I started in 1989, being part of the MOBIX team at McMaster was really critical in mentoring me to allow me to actually enter the granting system. So I think that particularly is added value that is, you know, in these days is particularly important.
Any others? Okay, Jean-Simon, we'll hear about the oncolytic virus. I'm a virologist, so I've always been interested. I was also on your boss's student committee when he was a graduate student. So I was a very young professor at the time. So
Bill was on mic.
Yeah. Voila.
Okay, so I'd like to begin, of course, by thanking the Terry Fox Research Institute and the Terry Fox Foundation for having funded the consortium for almost a decade now. And the consortium, the Canadian Oncolytic Viruses Consortium, its goal is basically to create safe and effective replicating virus therapeutics for clinical use. That's our goal. So how do we get there? It's pretty clear that we need a fundamental understanding of how these viral therapeutics work and how they interact with the tumor micro and macro environments. So to do this and to actually sort of understand these fundamental issues, we've put together a dynamic and interactive network of scientists, clinicians, institutes, funders, and industrial partners. So the Canadian Oncolytic Virus Consortium has been around since 2003, and it really is a pan-Canadian effort. The landscape of the researchers that have participated in this consortium has changed somewhat, but still it remains a pan-Canadian effort. Brad Nelson is in Victoria, is a member of COFCO. Brian Lichty, Karen Mossman, Jonathan Bramson, and Yong Hong Wan at McMaster University, and close by Andrea McCart in Toronto. In Ottawa was with our fearless leader, John Bell, where I'm located as well, along with the clinician scientist, Dr. Harry Atkins, and Dr. Dave Stoidl. Here in Montreal, Nahum Sonnenberg is part of this consortium, and one of his trainees, Dr. Tom Yane, who's been instrumental in this consortium. Also, Patrick Lee, who's our Atlantic representative and also a pioneer of oncolytic virotherapy. So altogether, we work as a whole to move these oncolytic viruses forward, starting from the bench and eventually to the clinic. So the way we've set up this program is in three different themes. The first is to look at the tumor microenvironment and how it interacts with oncolytic viruses and also how oncolytic viruses modulate the tumor microenvironment. And this is a team composed of Andrea McCart, Dr. Bell, and Dr. Nelson as well. The second theme is really the impact of the immune system on oncolytic virotherapeutics, and is actually a large group composed of Dr. Bramson, Lichty, Wan, Mossman, Lee, and Gujar, And so these people are looking at the impact of the immune response on the efficacy of oncolytic viral therapy, and also the opposite. And a third theme, of course, is actually cellular pathways that mediate resistance to oncolytic viral therapy at the cellular level, and developing strategies to mitigate this resistance in resistant tumor cells. So we've designed these projects, of course, to crosstalk quite significantly. And we have a number of interactions between each theme, because obviously all these things are interrelated. Cell pathways, tumor environment are obviously very, very linked, and the same can be said for the immune system. So we all talk with each other, and we're all an integrated network, and I think that's really the strength of the way we've devised this project grant. Another strength of our project grant, we believe, is this interaction with Orbit. So this is the Ontario Regional Biotherapeutics Program, which is more geared towards clinical trials and taking oncolytic viruses and other biotherapies to the clinic. So our concept is, of course, to take basic discoveries made under the umbrella of COFCO and then move them towards clinical trials through Orbit. And this is really a unique situation that I think has been working quite well for us. So we have, as I mentioned before, the way we've grouped our themes, we have a number of interactions, and that's allowed us to really have interdisciplinary mentoring. There are a lot of exchanges between our labs. We meet very frequently in all the PIs together. And also have these lab retreats where the trainees and the PIs come in and discuss and build new interactions and new projects that are obviously cross-disciplinary. And so we feel that that's a strength because really we have so many different expertise in our group that it really makes for forming quality researchers down the line. In fact, we also organize an international oncolytic virus meeting, and this year it's happening in Quebec City. So, as I mentioned, some of the strengths of our PPG are, of course, fostering inter-institutional collaborations and the trainee exchanges. We believe that's a strength. And, of course, the reason for that is that we've created highly collaborative projects, and they necessarily require investigator cooperation because of their interlinkedness. So some new ideas for moving forward with the project program grants would be to, in a way, if it was possible, allow clinical trial funding to some extent. Of course, we are uniquely positioned with Orbit to actually have this mechanism where we can take things done under the umbrella of Terry Fox and move them into the clinic, but I would probably be fair to say that not everybody's in that situation. And so if there was some mechanism there, that would be probably beneficial. We also feel that an envelope for patent filing would be relevant, and of course, you know, the science is not about commercialization, but it's pretty clear that commercialization is a necessary route to getting to clinical development. And so if our goal is to eventually bring these discoveries to the clinic, these envelopes are going to be extremely important. Also, it'd be nice to be able to take advantage of these funding mechanisms and develop programs to facilitate leveraging of the Terry Fox project grant funds within the actual budget system of the Terry Fox project grants as well. Some additional flexibility might be beneficial because, of course, a five-year project grant, a lot of things change over 5 years, and sometimes it would be nice to be able to redistribute funds to where the projects are successful. And so some kind of flexibility on that front would be interesting. To a certain degree, I think this is already being done, but I think that it's critical to keep the idea of putting emphasis on high-risk, high-return research, because, of course, I think that without that, we're not going to be doing transformative science. So that's basically what I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you.
Questions?
Vic.
I'd like you to just expand a little bit on your thinking on program to facilitate leverage. I'm not quite sure I know exactly what you mean by that.
Okay, so I guess, you know, this was an idea that was brought forth by Dr. Bell, and you know, basically the idea is to synergize this funding with other funding agencies. I don't think we have a clear idea how that could be done, but it would be a good opportunity, given the size of the purse, to actually leverage some funds.
Excellent. Thank you.
The issue of clinical trials is something the executive has been discussing.
Yeah.
I mean, are these grants big enough to have a significant impact on trials?
That's a good question. I mean, ultimately, I don't think it'd be possible to make large clinical trials, but perhaps some phase one trials might be possible.
Anything else? Oh,
yeah,
Jerry.
The inevitable. When you talk about clinical trials, you talked about Orbit.
Yeah.
What about the we have a national clinical trials group that was referred to as the NCIC clinical trials group, still very much in existence. So has there been any interactions or approaches with those folks to see if there is, because you're right, clinical trials can't really be accommodated, at least in these budgets,
yeah, that's right.
But they could be in theirs, perhaps. Has there been any discussion with that group?
In our case, I believe there has been. I'm not sure about the details of that. That would, Dr. Bell would be a better position to answer that. Maybe you know this, actually. Yeah.
Well, I know that, that Derek Yonker, who is one of the Orbit members, is the head of NCIC, the GI clinical trials site group. And so one of the viruses that is being developed through Orbit, which is not yet in clinical phase, is the phase one trial will probably be run by the NCIC. They're, I can't remember what it's called, they have a panel for sort of phase one investigational, new investigational agents. So there is, that's it. So, but I would think that one of the barriers is not, you've got the bench research and the very promising candidate, and then you've got a phase one clinical trial, which is generally affordable. It's that piece in between. It's that GMP, it's the getting the approval, getting the product to fit all the GMP criteria that Health Canada will allow you to give it to somebody. I think that, and maybe JS can comment, is a huge purse of money, it sounds like. Yeah.
For sure.
So that can sometimes be where, if you don't have a company, then that's where things maybe die off. Or.
Yeah, this has been a bit of an Achilles heel, actually, nationally, in how we do business, isn't it? Can I also, sorry, one other follow-up on that, though? You're unusual, I think, in the sense that most of the, not you personally.
I'll take that as a compliment.
Okay.
always have.
Yeah, but the program project category, most of them tend to be somewhat geographically focused.
Mm-hmm.
You're quite different in the sense
that
you really are a national network. So I just want to ask you, the monies that you get from the program project grant, I mean, how did they help knit you together? Or, in fact, were there components of it that could have been, if there were slightly different circumstances, it would have been more of a facilitating program?
Right. So that's an excellent question. So I think the way I'd answer that question is through the way the cores have been organized. So we have three cores. One is an administrative core. The other one is a cell bank, virus bank core. And the third one is a high-throughput biology core, which is mainly that last one is probably the only one that's focused in Ottawa. Well, I mean, they're all sort of coming out of Ottawa. But at the same time, the administrative core really manages the administration for all the group. The Cell and Virus Bank Corps also distributes resources to all of the group. The only one is the Bioinformatics Corps because obviously physically the location is in Ottawa. But we've sort of set it up to make sure that all the members of the consortium actually can benefit from the corps. And I think the way we've distributed the funding, each member gets their funding. It's not like we distribute the money from Ottawa and we have this, we make the choices at that level, right? And so we've distributed the money according to the scope of the projects, and we've used the course to sort of glue everything together.
last question, Jerry Battis.
Yeah, just to go back to something earlier about leverage and clinical trial development. I have to say, having played a role in the investigator new drug committee, phase one committee of the CTG, there's never been an organic relationship between made in Canada novel therapeutics and the NCI clinical trials group. So I've sat in on lots of presentations, and it didn't seem like there was anything preferential given to it. Now we're in the process of building a new network. This is generated by CCRA, a new network built on European models. RFA has been out, and I would say it would be really interesting for TFRI to start talking with them so that TFRI could, through its projects, be part of a pipeline in a very organic way to the new network, which eventually will evolve. And I think you know, investigators with new ideas and novel therapeutics, even with corporate backing and all the preclinical talks, we're still talking to colleagues as though they were strangers soliciting a space in phase one program. It didn't make sense, and I think we should redo that, and we're rebuilding it. It's a chance to really get to the table.
I think Terry Fox is part of the discussion at CCRA on the new trials initiative, so hopefully that will be sorted out. I think we better move on. I'd like to thank the three speakers. And would you mind, I think your talks are all on this computer. You each had a slide on suggestions. Would you mind if we use those in our report? Okay, thanks. I'll take it. I don't think I have anyone to give it to. Thanks. Okay, I want to get on to the discussions now and just make a couple of comments. So time is limited. Want to give everyone a chance to speak. As I said, we're only focusing on the program project grants, not the translational program of Terry Fox. And as Vic said before, we're not talking about discontinuing this project. We're all highly impressed by the success of the program project grant, and we're looking into ways to enhance it or hopefully down the line even increase it. The other thing, just general rules, when you make a comment, just identify yourself. I think most of us know each other, but that won't be true for people online. This is about the issues that we want to discuss to consult with you. It shouldn't be a forum to present new projects, okay? We wanted to hear from the three existing projects to give you everyone a sense of what's going on and what a program project is like, but this isn't a forum to discuss other potential projects. We really want to consult you on the four major areas. The current applicants, and there are none of them in the audience, but what we talk about has nothing to do with the current process, but it will affect next year's process where the LOIs are due in July. And that's the invited remarks. Okay, so here is the first topic to be discussed. There is a microphone, which I'd like you to pass around. Maybe let's hand it to Peter or somebody to get started. You don't have to say anything, but you can. Does it come out? Oh, you have one already. He has one already. All right. There you go. Yeah. Yes. All right. Look more like John Goodman every day. Okay. So I've listed the areas that came out of our discussions I think any discussion about any of these areas to do with the scope and the purpose of the program, that's the first thing we'd like to focus on for about 20 minutes. So I can sit down and leave that up, and the floor is now open. Maybe
so I think what we've heard from at least two of the three talks is that I think it'll be important to keep a strong focus on sort of the beginnings of the pipeline, right? And a focus on fundamental research that will be... My name is Peter Siegel. I'm here at the Goodman Cancer Center, and I'm a member of the program project that Bill Mueller is the current lead on. We've seen with some of the other funding agencies sort of a shift to sort of a focus on new ideas for short-term grants or high impact at translation. But the need to keep an eye on looking at pathways, understanding pathways, having potential targets come out of that basic research to have those lead into the pipeline, right? And to make sure that there's a strong commitment and a strong focus to keep that tap open, if you will, and constantly have, you know, potential new avenues to exploit being fed into and being handed off further down the line. And I think that this is something that I would urge the committee to keep in mind in terms of maintaining a good, strong focus on basic mechanistic understandings of the disease and how that leads to, you know, potential avenues for, you know, therapeutic intervention.
Other comments? So does that, so are people, the Vic put up the current description of what the project is about, and that is, I think, early basic, I'm badly paraphrasing, but basic research questions that ultimately that will reflect on the potential cancer cures with a possibility of translation of the new information. That's a bad restatement of it, but that captures more or less what's in it. So is there general consensus about that? Anyone think it should be more or less translational, or what about other pillars? I'm sure the room is full of Pillar 3 and Pillar 4 people. There's a Pillar 4. There's a Pillar 5 person.
Well, I just think that, you know, it's a bit difficult to define, because at the same time you want transformative science. That's clearly a mandate. And studying pathways is extremely important and a key thing to keep doing, and I fully support that. But transformative isn't necessarily always based on pathways. And so, you know, some of these novel immunotherapies and things like that might be things that we could look at that are not necessarily looking at pathways, but experimental therapeutics that might be, in a way, transformative. So I think pathways are good and all that, but we got to keep an eye on transformative, and we got to keep an eye on high risk, high reward, because that's the only place where these things are going to get funded.
I'm writing.
I'd just like to make Bill Mueller from the Goodman Cancer Center. I would just like to make the point that the Terry Fox team grant is really one of the few programs, in fact, I think really the only active one, that really supports a collaborative interaction. And you probably heard stress throughout the programs the importance of these cores as really a catalyst for innovation. And when you talk about innovative and transformative research, that requires this sort of synergy between groups of individuals, a la Bell Labs in the 70s or 80s, where you're really thinking quite out of the box. And I think in many of these programs are actually fulfilling that function. And with the advent of having very strong core support, we're really able to add innovation and conduct that transformative research, which is so important for cancer research.
Jerry.
I just have a question for the audience, and it's one that may sound, well, most of my questions do sound stupid. But what do you mean by high risk? We all use the term high risk. What are we talking about?
I'm not sure what high risk means.
Well, we all say we want to be able to support, you know, something that might be a bit risky, but what do we really mean by that? I mean, I think it would be very helpful for us to try and grapple with that a little bit, because otherwise we'll keep using the language without knowing what we're really saying.
I think that concept has really been perpetuated by the innovation grants we see coming up to the CCS. My opinion is high risk usually means failure in many cases. And if you look at the track record of those.
Yeah, I mean, you don't fund something just because it's so off the wall that you know no one else will fund it. I mean, that's not a reason to fund it.
Yeah, but precisely that's what innovation and idea programs are all about. Yeah.
Anyway, Peter is going to respond to this.
Right. So I think when you're talking about high-risk types of projects, those are best suited to, you know, having these innovation-type awards where, you know, they're defined period of time. You're given a chance to develop proof that it's going to pan out or not. But in terms of moving to a program project, right, you want to, I think, be developing ideas and research that, you know, as you have a very solid base and you want to, you know, move that forward. So I think all of the work that's being done within the program projects are sort of innovative and cutting edge, right? And to so I think that that's just part and parcel of good science, right, and the research that's being pursued, so that to have that specific twist on it, I think, you know, that's best left to sort of these innovative type wards that are currently handled, you know, by other funding mechanisms, and that really what you want to be focusing on in terms of the program projects is an excellent team, right, an interdisciplinary team that's working on a focused problem, and that are using all of the resources available to them in terms of the individuals that are part of the team, the cores that are developed within the context of the program project, and all of that comes together. Yeah.
Dr. Ling.
So I appreciate all the comment. I'm just wondering whether the descriptor, say, new frontiers, is that understood by everybody who apply for the PPG, that what that means, or is it just a kind of marketing term? I'm just putting it out there. I'm neutral about. I mean, I'm not suggesting we change the name, but you know, when people think about new frontiers, is that we're talking about, you know, the bleeding edge, the cutting edge, the sort of near the edge?
I think that's what we're talking about, and you probably heard from all these programs. I think they really are on the cutting edge of many of these fields. And I would add to that they've also been very synergistic. In our case, within our program, we have at least two project grants with the NIH, PO1s, one at MD Anderson and one at Ohio State, that are a direct result of the Terry Fox cores, which have really been instrumental in allowing us to reach out to the general cancer community.
Carol.
I was going to comment. So the last speaker, I'm sorry, I've forgotten your first name. You're the one who had more emphasis on high risk in your slide, but just a few minutes ago, you used the word, which is the more, I think, what people really mean, which is transformative. And I think that is the word that underlies right. New frontiers.
Mm-hmm. I've never done or read an analysis, maybe others have, but, you know, the idea that innovative sort of, not off the wall, but out there, that this is where the new stuff comes from. I would guess that a lot of new stuff comes from straight, solid science in an area where new things issue all the time that you didn't expect were there. So I'm not convinced that it has to be something really unusual or not studied before, that's where the new stuff comes from. I'm not convinced that's true, actually.
I think you have that in your program as it exists with the three-year grants. You really are funding groups that really are on the edge and pushing forward the field. So that in many of those cases, those groups have to establish themselves and show that they really are. And that is obviously innovation and a bit of risk. So that allows in subsequent renewal to see if that idea actually panned out.
Rebecca, and then Jerry.
I had a question also for the audience. Is if we're talking about transformative and that potentially means, you know, having an impact ultimately in the clinic, whether or not the Terry Fox funds that, do most program projects have an avenue to allow that to happen, or is the ultimate goal simply to, you know, disseminate information through publication, or do most those?
Maybe I can
restate
build on your,
that. Yeah, I'll be on record.
Exactly. I'll build on it on an excellent comment. I think the point here is, yeah, innovation comes from, you know, very good research, but an individual investigator or a couple of investigators working together can't take it to that next step. And the idea is to actually move it forward. I think that's a big part of this.
So the interdisciplinarity of it and the capacity of putting different people with different capacities to make it happen and test whether or not this is something.
Tarek, thank you for coming. I knew you had to leave.
That's the value, I think.
Monsieur Massy.
Bernard Massy.
Mon ami Bernard Massy, who's one of the big adenovirus vector guys. I don't mean big, but important.
Yeah, I just want to make a comment about my view on high risk, high reward, just to echo what they're saying. It really depends on how you define your endpoint. If your endpoint is to contribute to cutting-edge knowledge as you can measure by high-impact publication, of course, if you want to have a paper in very high-impact publication journal, you need to come with something which is really outstanding. If that's your endpoint, well, you have to come up with the right type of science and core facility that allows you to do that, because as we advance in biology and system biology, I mean, in order to get these fancy questions, we understand that it's network, it's very complex, it's multifactorial, so you need these nice programs as was described by Bill. If your endpoint is to come up with a therapeutic, successful therapeutic for cancer, would it be small molecule or biologics or viral vector, which in my mind are part of biologics, then high risk, high reward is a successful therapy that saves life and can be produced by industry because there is a market, that there's a need for it, and people will be willing to pay for it. That's, to me, a very high-risk endeavor, because if you look at the pipeline, I mean, we've developed over the last couple of years a program in biologics at the NRC, and it's going to be announced as soon as we have permission from government to do so, but it's running. And if you look at the pipeline of biologics, which is really a significant new therapeutic modality for cancer therapy, I mean, there's a huge number of these molecule candidates that are being tested right now. Which one will really make a difference as a therapeutic entity? That's a very high-risk project in my perspective if your endpoint is to get therapy.
Yeah, you're right about that. I can say from firsthand knowledge that you can bring something all the way through to phase two, have a phenomenally successful phase two trial, yet a company decides they're going to take something else forward rather than that. And that could be based on, so that is high risk, that's true. Let me, Michel? Yeah.
Just a quick comments about, for example, the CQDM here in Quebec.
Michel Tremblay from the
Michel
Goodman
Tremblay
Cancer
from the Goodman Cancer Center. Thank you. Thank you, Phil. And an old folk from Phil. But my point on CQDM is also a potential partner for Terry Fox on these directions of trying to implement. The advantage that CQDM, the niche that they had is to bring pharma to the table and help them put outside to universities what are the true demand that pharma needs to a particular field, for example, cancer or other type. And in this case, we have a lot of nice platform from the Terry Fox team grant, which could use this transition, as you mentioned, this difficult part to bring something to the phase one through a similar program, which it's funded by pharma. And in that case, a non-proprietary one, so it's really open. So I think the model that they've put forward that's working now for several years in Quebec and now is expanded to Ontario is a very interesting one to have partners that will fill up the gap that we're talking about. So that will be one thing. A second comment, like, is a bit different. It's talking about, again, the new awards from the new investigator. We talked about Frontier. Frontier is very hard to keep with the same people at the same table for many years. Having the ideas of bringing a new partner in these teams, having new young scientists coming in, and new networks between different people, I think this really automatically brings new things at the table. And at the end, the committee that you choose to review those must first and foremost look for good science, as Phil mentioned. This is the only basis to move, to make sure that what will be built is solid and be moved forward. So that's my only comment on that. And on the program, of course, I agree with both Rusty and Bill on the type of team grant and the amount of money that should be put. Of course, we would like to have as many good team coming in. I know the resources are limited everywhere, but there's a few directions we talked about that perhaps could bring partners without having to, you know, eat the core of the program. So that's my.
I think we probably come to a consensus about one and two. Just a couple of ideas on what's the big thing downstream that you see in the next 10 years. Jean-Simon mentioned immunotherapies as one. As one aspect. Anything else you see out there?
I think what's becoming increasingly apparent is really a combination of therapies up front is going to be critical in dealing with, you know, acquisition of therapeutic resistance. And immunotherapies combined with kinase inhibitors actually will likely have a very synergistic effect, because it's very clear that kinase is actually creating an immunosuppressive environment. So that's an example where you can really talk about combinations. And where we probably could add added value for, you know, pharma, and maybe through the CQDM angle, is we really have the option to really test combinations of therapies in preclinical models and really get a firsthand idea of how these things interact. And I think that will facilitate people to, in the clinical trials arena, to actually test those combinations.
So, I think your idea is that looking at new combinations, this would help reduce resistance, which is a huge problem with monotherapy.
And recurrence. I mean, in the example I gave with immunotherapy, you can well recognize the fact that a major problem in cancer is recurrence. And if you have an active immune system already engaged dealing with the emerging tumor, then I think that would deal with that issue.
I mean, we'll hear about other things, hopefully, but, you know, both immunotherapy and resistance are two topics we've already heard about in other venues, not this consultation, but as potential areas of growth. So that's interesting they came out of this audience as well. One other crackpot idea where 10 years from now that's going to be our... I mean, you know, it wasn't long ago. It was just 25 years ago oncolytic viruses were a pipe dream. I mean, it's been going... This is not new stuff. This has been going on for 25 years. So actually longer than that. Anything else? So the evaluation... You've talked a bit about, I mean, Bernard was talking a bit about this. What is it we're looking for? Is it scientific impact? Is it, how do you think you'd like to see this? I mean, clearly excellence of the science and the quality of the papers is an issue. But I guess Bernard was arguing that, in fact, you might have a huge impact on therapy without the Nature Cell and Science paper, because this is not what Nature Cell and Science necessarily publishes. So, anything further to add around that? Jean-Simon?
So, this is an area where perhaps I have a bit of a bias, but I do think that the end results and the therapies that actually come out of our research is really what we should be gauging our successes on. I mean, publications are super important for dissemination of knowledge, and that's a key endeavor for all of us to progress. But ultimately, what we want to develop are new therapies, things that work, that cure people. Now that's hard to, it's hard as an endpoint, because of course it takes such, you know, multidisciplinary efforts and multiple teams to actually get there. So maybe under the umbrella of the Terry Fox, it's hard to gauge success by numbers of therapies put out there. But certainly, if there was a way to measure the level of participation or the how much involvement the groups have with respect to bringing these therapies to
well,
the clinic.
Then we're moving, then we're to some extent changing our original definition of the program, because this program is largely focused on the early, at the moment, on the early end of knowledge creation with the potential for the right hand development. So if we're asking for more tangible proof that this that we're developing the right end, then that is a change. That's more like our other program, which is more translational. I'm just throwing that out there.
I think basic knowledge does contribute to therapies. It may not be apparent, but I mean, you know, through the avenues in my own field, like the ERBB2 field, without understanding the receptor itself, we would not have a receptor. I mean, without understanding the receptor, Herceptin would not be in clinical practice right now. And understanding the relevance, so that's a clear example where basic research has contributed enormously to
same
treatment
with CML,
model.
CML same,
too.
Same deal.
Yeah, and the small molecule inhibitors coming online right now with you know, the ERBB2 small molecule inhibitors and other inhibitors targeting the EZH2 trimethylase. Those are revolutionary sorts of approaches to diseases like glioblastoma. So again, this all evolved out of basic research. And the fact that these Terry Foxes have spawned huge collaborative grants like PIA1s and MD Anderson, whose goal is to cure all cancer, apparently. But so I think
we've heard that before.
Yeah, exactly.
In Nixon's time, I was a young man.
Suffice to say, I think we are making very important contributions through basic science into therapeutic modalities.
We have to stop this part soon, but yeah, let's continue.
In fact, I'm sending
a
bit that to you, Phil, a question, because Cancer UK has invested a lot of money in developing drugs in different universities, and my understanding from you, it was not a great success. And I'm one of the ones that believe that we should not develop drugs at the university. It's not our job. That's what I would in fact ask Terry Fox not to go in that direction. It would be a big disaster and a bottomless pit for all the funds and the outcome that you can get. It's different when you go in the clinic directly with the other programs. So there's something more focused. But in terms of trying to develop drugs at the university level, I would be extremely cautious on that, certainly.
Clarify maybe a point. Don't want to be misinterpreted here, but I guess what I was saying is that it's not the basic research is not the problem, but it's the contribution of that basic research towards eventual clinical therapeutics. Like the EGF receptor is a great example. But that ended up in a therapeutic, right? So
yeah, but you don't know that.
I realize that. I know you don't, but you know this. Yeah. You know, historically, how you evaluate the success of your program is, in my view, what you should be looking at down the line.
Somebody's pointing. Is there someone? Vic sees things sometimes.
you know. That's another way.
let's just spend 30 seconds on the last point. Do you think this program should be targeted in a specific area?
No.
Thank you. Okay. We'll discuss that more in Toronto. I'm sure they'll have other ideas. Okay, topic two. So that's good. We're on time. Topic two is about the design of the... Now, this, you all commented on it one way or another in your presentations. How many programs, the time frames, and so on. To some extent, you've already... answered many of these questions, but it might be worth rephrasing. So how many programs should be supported, I guess, really is reflected by how many, the size of the programs, which we can talk about, but also the amount of money. And we were sure you were going to ask us about money. What I can say, I know I wasn't supposed to talk about this, but there are serious, but however, I'm at home, huh? I'm at home. You know, there are efforts. There are certainly ongoing efforts to change the level of funding in the Fox Foundation, and everyone is aware that the project, the program, is more successful than its budget. So I think that's a given. We're all on the same page there, and there are serious efforts to increase the funding, and that's really all we can say because that's where we're at. So,
could I just add?
I guess you can.
Thank you. Well, I guess, you know, one of the reasons we would like to get your feeling for it is that we recognize that Canada has 34 million people. Tokyo has 32 million people. The number of scientists in Canada is only a certain number. And if we're saying that, you know, the program project is looking for the very best team of the Canadian cancer researcher or scientists coming together, it'd be a good idea to kind of think about how many Canada should be able to legitimately support and still have excellence as our primary aim with impact thrown in as well. So I don't know the answer to that. I mean, right now we have, 13, right? Is that a good number? Should it be 50 or should it be, you know, just question.
Yeah. Maybe it should be two.
Well, I don't know. I mean, to think about it a little bit. I mean, money is one issue, clearly. But let's say money is not an issue. You know, what would be the right number for Canada without compromising excellence and compromising the cutting edge and all the good things that you people have talked about?
It's hard to put a number. I mean, there's a lot of many good groups. I think the track character here is very important too. So it's a mix of all of those that makes a good group. So people that come with innovations, come with solid, you know, background in science and structure. In fact, you may well see in the next competitions of these, you know, we have too many teams. Maybe some of them will fuse together to come up with something totally new. We may, in fact, to see, it's not the number that will I think, drive the story. I think it will be more the essence of the projects that are coming forward, how people see themselves in the community. I think this is where the best team will come up. And in terms of number, it's pretty hard. If we look at basic science in the country, you're right. If you compare to Tokyo, maybe 20 top teams that you can put everybody. One of the discussion we had was to make the difference between a super team and a good team will be how many of top scientists you have around that have a track record and new scientists coming in, which you can fill. You know, the team is as good as the weakest link in many ways when you apply, but is that the criteria? So anyway, that's my quick thought.
I think Nicole Beauchemin from the Goodman, I think I could easily see it increasing from a little more than 13. I would say the number is probably between 15 and 20. If you look at the Operation Grants competition from other agencies, you see the grants with the multiplication of co-applicants that are starting on a new topic, and they will develop, and you can see them coming in the next few renewal rounds where they will team up with other people from the same region or from different regions of the country. And the best would probably be recruited to these Terry Fox team grants if the number was possible and the funding was possible. I mean, there's been a multiplication of a good number of younger investigators that have joined all over the country, and it's going to explode within the next 5 years for sure. So if nothing is done to bring them all together under one umbrella of a Terry Fox team grant, for instance, it's a bit of a waste of all this effort and energy. And I think this program has done this. It's done this here in Montreal, all over the country, and having a few more would certainly help.
In terms of the level of funding, what I heard, I think certainly from two of the presentations was, maybe three, is that the idea of an initial grant should probably be for a shorter time and a smaller amount of money than the renewals. That's what I heard. And in fact, we heard from a new program. I mean, it takes a while. And actually, we heard two long-term, or at least renewals, that have already been renewed, and one new program that's up for first renewal. I think all of you said it takes some time to get started, you to build your larger team and so on. That's what I heard, is that there is a place for a new application being a lower amount of money and a shorter period of time as well, you think? Shorter than 5 years. Do you think having the option to be up to 5 years? I'm not sure how one would evaluate whether it's 3 or 5 for a new program, frankly. But
I think 3 years is, as we saw from Rusty's presentation, to really
form a formative group, and you really could evaluate at that point how well integrated they've become. So I think 3 years was great for us too. So I thought that was
really 3 years. I mean, both you're going to be up. Is 3 years long enough? The competition, if anything, is going to get stiffer in Terry Fox, because a number of boats have been launched, and there isn't going to be a dock for all of them. So that's a pretty bad metaphor. But sorry for those of you online, my apologies. But by the way, anyone online, if there is, I know Frank is probably still out there. If there's anyone looking, you can send questions or comments in. Not yet? Oh, not yet. We don't want them yet. None have come in yet. I mean, I feel like, anyway. So, 3 years, smaller. I can't even remember what the hell I was saying earlier on. But as far as the renewals, well, no, okay, is 3 years long enough? That was my question. You're going to be up for renewal next year.
Yeah, I totally agree with Bill, though. The 3 years is enough for Terry Fox to evaluate, first of all, it was really at leading edge, and see if the program really, gelled together, the people are there, and they're doing what they committed to do, and if it's not, they should be so at the renewal, they should, if they are renewing, they should be competing with teams which have made efforts to really move things forward. I think 3 years is plenty for the first time, and it gives a chance to other group to come in.
I thought that, well, isn't this just like an initial grant, operating grant? 3 years is an awfully short time for new investigators. However, that's not what this is. These are not initial first-time operating grants. These are grants to teams that, some of which at least, these are people who've had long programs.
For example, the core facilities are really tough to put together, and you need other funds. You need to leverage that money of Terry Fox to do things. So it's very, I think it would be relatively easy for a review team to see what is the success of the core, which is really in parallel to the science of the new team. And so this is very important to be kept. Very important to be evaluated and see what is this new science, new technology coming in, brought to this idea initially of the leading edge of that team. So I think that's from leading edge.
It'll be interesting. Certainly the value of the cores, all three projects have talked about this. It'll be interesting to see if this is something we hear in our other visits. I expect it will be, but...
We skip to number 7 because I think a lot of what we're talking about hinges on on that. Because I mean, I can tell you from being, well, it doesn't matter whether you're on this review process or any other, but it's no surprise to anybody here that when decisions are made as to which PPG proposals get funded, it's not that they're the only ones that deserve funding. It's of the ones that deserve funding, they're about 20%. So it's not as, I'm not sure what the right number of funded operations is, but it's for sure number seven, if we were to limit numbers of renewals, for example, that would let more people in, but then are we undoing all the good investment that we've had? And I think that's a discussion that I would appreciate hearing what your views are.
And if I could comment as well, if 3 years is enough for a new one to go into for renewal and we're asked to evaluate the success of the core facility, that renewal is competing with other renewals that are there for the third, fourth. There's one that's been there seven times. Mm-hmm. And so there's a huge difference. And I speak from having reviewed these things more than once. There's a huge difference then between what would come from a three-year proposal, which is really just two by the time you, it's 2 years when you would be submitting your LOI, competing with a group that's been together.
How about six or seven renewals? We have some in that category.
So this
is
discussion,
that program still innovative and still, you know?
This discussion about how many times, I think, is quite relevant.
Is there any feeling? I mean, I think you should cut it off at no.
But could that be built into the evaluation process in terms of the committee, and we can maybe come back to that when we get to the review process and standardizing maybe if there's, you know, a finite number of teams that are being evaluated, could the same evaluation team move across, right, so that you have that consistency?
We'll get to that in a minute.
But then even within that review process, could you say, okay, these are the first-time grants that are coming in, we'll put those together, and you can evaluate them sort of side by side, and then, you know, sort of like the CRS does when you're looking at new grants versus renewals, right? So that you're comparing apples to apples versus, you know, ones that are maybe coming back in again that went through a renewal, they weren't successful, but they're coming back in again, right? So I don't know if that type of an approach could be taken, you know, just in terms of the way they're reviewed, one against the other.
Surely there ought to be a way in the renewal process to ask the question, does this grant deserve a fifth renewal? You know what I mean? Or a sixth renewal? Or, you know, does it still, you know, it should be explicitly approached,
I think,
probably.
You're touching on the whole idea of frontiers and innovative. Is
yeah,
it still on the frontiers,
is what we're
or
talking
is it
about.
Just
yeah, exactly,
a group?
Exactly.
Is just a group of investigators doing what they've done for 35 years? I mean, and I think that's where having new people come into a program really acts as a rejuvenating factor, where you have the program advancing and evolving. So that question ought to be, I guess, asked for those long-time renewals. Have they advanced? Are they innovative still? I think that's the basic question you're trying to address there.
So that should be an important part of the review, especially if we're mixing one first versus tenth renewal. Can I just go back to finish off what we started? So I heard a consensus that initial slightly smaller grants, 3 years for initial grants, you generally agree with. I also heard the idea that there may be, I mean, I'm aware of most of the program project grants, and there is definitely a spectrum of scope in these grants. There are some that are three investigators, that are three fairly focused projects. There are others that are much larger. We heard one at the executive last week in Toronto that was quite a large initiative with over eight PI, big PI, major PIs, you know, on the scene. So I heard one of you, I forget which one, suggest that maybe that a million, we might cut down the renewals to a million, but leave open the possibility of a larger, up to 1.5, if it's comprehensive enough. Is that what I heard?
Yeah, I mean, I think there ought to be a flexibility, particularly with renewals, as you mentioned, a core group of three or four individuals versus a larger group, 9 to 10 individuals. Basically the scope and the requirements for those two programs are a little bit different from a financial standpoint.
So you wouldn't see, if we cut down the standard renewal amount max to 1 million, of course, people can use this to go out and look for other funds, matching funds to enhance all this and use the name and so on. But there should be an opening for making a case that it be a larger one. Is that?
Absolutely.
That's interesting.
Idea of right now we have this enhancement idea that, you know, let's say you awarded, let's say, $1 million, but you can go look for more money to enhance that grant. Is that something that we're very comfortable with?
So far, no one has actually done it.
has that?
It's only been in place, I think, a year.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Stephen has a point.
Yeah. My point is that just to answer that question, there is in the current competition there are a number of applicants of which one we understand is enriched. So it's only been taken up by one group in the current competition.
I mean,
this is the first time we've done it. So,
I mean, you know, you could put on the table, this is Genome Canada. You know, every dollar you ask for has to be matched by another dollar. I don't imagine there's a huge level of support for that. I don't want to prejudge, but is there?
As a requirement
to apply.
I'm sure people don't want that.
The problem is that the access to funds like that are not equal,
yeah,
and they have nothing to do with excellence.
Right. It would be detrimental to other places in Canada. So you would fund large cities. We're not complaining in Montreal, but I think it would be difficult for a smaller team from a province which don't have as much money, and they contribute to Terry Fox Run too. So there is a... you want to go to the best science, but you still, at the same time, if it's possible, to represent the people that gives fund also. So I think this will be detrimental. I think you can ask for some amount if you want, but it should not be the one with the biggest amount of money on the table, because you cannot do the accountant on all of those things. It's impossible. Mm-hmm. So that would be a bad idea.
Arnold. Do you know that one of my physicians and colleagues, I kept calling him Arnum, and his name is Armin, and he gave me hell. So I'm going to call you Armin.
I give you hell. Anyways, what did I want to say now?
There you go.
You screwed me up.
Never mind. Okay. I'm just going to stop right here. Go
so
ahead.
Two things. One is... obviously, once a program runs into a more translational setting, things get more expensive. And it might get so expensive that, you know, a regular Terry Fox program grant cannot fund us anymore. So then it's time to get outside money, I think. I think for the basic research that we're all doing to find new pathways, new targets and these things, the money is plentiful. This is enough for anybody to find these things. And I think the big hope is, for all of us, is to stumble upon a known pathway or a known target so that we can get into some drug repurposing exercise and not engage a pharma company into a 20 or 30-year drug discovery program, because by that time we're all retired. So we want something faster. And so the goal here is to find something that's already been given to patients that we can repurpose for another use. And the pharma companies will jump in that too, because they will make, let's say, fipronilimab is a good example, mTOR inhibitor, right, was useless for pharma companies. They weren't interested because it was off patent. But since it was so promising, they immediately jumped in and made a derivative, and now they're making lots of money with that. So I think that's one of the things we should look out for and that we should support, not guide pharma companies into a new drug discovery effort, because it takes way too long, and I think most pharma companies have stopped that anyways. The other thing is, if somebody had for 35 years a new frontier grant, I would be worried. That group has 35 years ago said that they're going to translate something, and in 35 years they haven't. How is that possible? Have they changed focus? That's just a question for you, because I don't get that.
I think the ones that have been renewed multiple times, the leadership have changed, the composition have changed, the title even have changed, but essentially, you know, the theme had gone along. So you can imagine that if you had, I don't know, just imagine something very fundamental, let's say in genomics or something, you can imagine that the team can change, but it still may have a genomic focus.
Just out of interest, you mentioned genomics. You mentioned immunotherapy and resistance as two new areas of the future. Is genomics already passé? I suppose it is, in a way.
Epigenetics now, genome engineering, locus-specific modification, less applicable to cancer than other kinds of disease, but they are, you know,
these are all you new are directions. Michel Tremblay, Dr. Brenton. That's what I would. So there's a lot of new field. The CRISP, the TALENs, there are all sorts of new things coming up. But in the field of cancer, we are, as Bill mentioned, in the places of multiple drugs, resistance, and perhaps immunotherapy. That's for sure. There's still a lot of things on that too.
I think we probably. Oh, one more comment. Well, we have 5 minutes. So
just as on this idea of multiple renewals and are they still on the leading edge? I think if a program is successful in terms of the model systems that they have, there's always going to be new developments in technology that they can then go back and reapply right to the systems that they're using, and they're going to learn more and more. So it's, and I think that by developing these cores. And I think within the program project that we have and the one that we heard from Rusty is that they're taking advantage of these new techniques and revisiting, right, and learning, you know, more from the systems that we're exploiting to understand the disease. So you can have a renewal of a program, you know, over multiple years, but if you're looking at how those cores are evolving, how they're changing, how they're being applied to the research question, there's constant innovation there, right? And so I think that has to be sort of part and parcel of the evaluation process. How much are these teams moving? How much are they adopting, you know, what they can adopt to apply to the systems under study? So
that's what I thought I was hearing. And so if a renewal is coming up, part of the renewal should be at least a short discussion of why a sixth or a fifth or a third renewal is warranted in terms of the scope of the project. I think that seems clear from what you're saying. So,
for example, your 2D gel protein facility core in your lab is really exciting.
I think that's being sarcastic. Well, I hate to tell you, we're the only ones that got the dish to work as far as I know. I don't think anyone else has done it, so. You didn't like my 2D?
No, no, I don't mind at all. I mean, the importance is the integrative approach and the new technologies. I'm the oldest person, I think, in this room. And yet, as a graduate...
No, are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
As a graduate student, I heard about the importance of energy metabolism in cancer. I mean, that idea, most of the ideas you folks are talking about are absolutely not new. What's new is the application of an array of new methodologies all at one time. That's what's new.
Metabolism in cancer is an old idea we rejected long ago.
Yeah, exactly.
Wrongly. Rebecca.
I just had a question about the renewals again, and wondering if it's also important to explain how the members have changed over time, and is there an HR plan to bring in not necessarily brand new investigators, but newer investigators to bring them onto the team, especially if you're going to be around for 35 years. Presumably there are people outgoing and then new people going in, so is that an important criteria to evaluate those projects as well?
I think we all think of it, particularly how our projects evolve, and I think it's very important that there has to be, you know, renewal and innovation at each stage. And, I'm sure projects that have been funded with 7 renewals have gone through that process of innovation and renewal.
I think one more comment on this area, and then we'll move on.
So I tend to agree with everything that was said. I guess the key thing is obviously what the metrics become as you move along through your project grant. Like, if you've been working for 35 years, what are the metrics? Is it still publications? Is that still what we're looking at? I think that may be a consideration for how long you continue funding a program.
Actually, that's an interesting idea we haven't heard, is that as renewals continue, you ought to be showing more and more success in the translation end. That's actually a good point, a really good point.
And you obviously can't do that in 3 years, but later programs should certainly have something to show for, I would think.
But, I'm
the current definition, that's not part of the current definition. The current definition is that you're looking for therapies that, or you're looking for things that could have translational impact, not even that will, but that could. And lots of programs, I guess, would have successes that maybe are developed completely separate from the program itself. So they can't, I guess, in a sense, can't really take ownership of that success, but that success is based on the fundamental knowledge that they bring forward.
So this is, we're finished on this, but this is an interesting philosophical difference, because what I just stated, following your comment, is to some extent a change in the definition. The definition of what the program is changes with the length of time of the program. That's basically what I'm saying. And what you're saying is the program should continue, no matter how many renewals, should be upfront new information that has potential for development. Is that right?
The current definition, that's correct. What the current definition says.
So let's get a consensus, and we'll bring this up in if it doesn't emerge. Do people think that the number of renewals should be linked to evidence of translatability?
Well, I think successes should be counted, but every competition, the committee should have a clean slate and look at the evaluations of the team in front of them and what they're proposing. It's not like you have a ticket absolutely to go to the show that because you had one before. I think there'll be enough advantage to have been there and been funded by Terry Fox already. But I think we should show in every competition if the team is good or not, and it has the criteria. Second thing, on just what you discussed, I think it would be a big mistake to go too much translation, or at least translation, understanding it in the way, for example, licensing, patents should be this. There's other thing. Translation than giving it to the clinicians at the other side of the corridor. There's much more than that, and I think that should be tabulated also in the evaluations that the committee sees. And that's why the visit is very important. You have a real intimate interactions with the professors, and you know what's happening with the team and what really they've done to move the project evolve. If you make a monoclonal antibody, which is used by 50 labs on a new protein, which is very important for cancer, you've done quite a lot.
Yes,
you transform the way people
absolutely.
See it. A new animal model is also as important. So I think translation in a broad sense, I think it's okay. But if we see translation in the sense perhaps of the other program, which on their own have reasons to be there, but if we put all the effort of Terry Fox on that, I think we'd be mistaken.
I guess my point, I hear what you're saying, but after 35 years, I think the program has a right to ask how many antibodies has it dispersed?
Absolutely.
How many new therapies have been developed? How many, et cetera. I accept your broader definition of translation, but
yeah, it's a different issue than what you're just raising.
Something should have happened.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So is that what I'm hearing?
Sorry, I wasn't clear, because I think we may be at odds here.
Okay.
Research, in my mind, is not linear. So, you know, when you look at Herceptin's a good example, it wasn't sort of one person in one lab or one group that started it, and ta-da, now you've got a drug in. I mean, it's you can't always tell how a particular contribution, as fundamental as it might be, is going to be picked up by other groups. And you know, the path from early discovery to some
true
translational impact is quite circuitous.
The most amazing thing about Herceptin is I haven't heard a cogent explanation of how it works.
Well, good point. So. But I think that we need. But I think it's reasonable to. I think if I think renewal should be based on as I say, excellence.
Is it fair? Rather, I don't want to draw a specific conclusion, but this is something that the committee and others should think about in terms of the downstream renewal, number of renewals, and so on. This is certainly worth thinking about.
I think it's very important in terms of site visit committees that you have an international representation, so you really have the experts in the field, so, I mean, that recognize what is really good science.
Well, that leads us right into the third topic. I'm sorry, one. How many times do you think she has a question, Vic?
I'm Judith Seinfeld from the Goodman Cancer Center. I was just kind of wondering if basically what you're saying is that with time, the weight of the criteria to get the grant is getting different, right? I guess, do we keep it all the same, so it's always innovation that you, your first renewal, your fifth renewal? Or is it that there's going to be, maybe as Peter mentioned before, like for the earlier renewal, it will be one set of criteria, and then when you have more renewals, then you have different sets of criteria, and then it will be very different competition and different way of evaluating it, right?
You're right on, but that's what emerged from Jean Simon's comment, and it sounded like an interesting new thought.
Okay, so the committee
is not ready to, but I think this is something we should think about, at least.
What do you think?
Yeah, what do you think?
Innovation should be the main criteria regardless of the number of renewals.
Okay.
I think it should always be innovation, and maybe when you have more renewal, you should be maybe, you know, very perceptive at how the innovation is staying in the team. But I think, it, in my opinion, like the TerraFox, it should be all about how innovative is the research program regardless of the number of years that it's been funded.
Perhaps in relation to that, it may be important to actually for those long-term renewals to get a sense of how the grant has evolved over the years. That would give you a more comprehensive view of the kind of the evolutionary tree, so to speak, of a program.
That's putting then the emphasis on what they have done as opposed to what they are proposing to do.
I think both should be taken into account.
I think the reality is currently the emphasis by the review committees is on innovation.
Jerry, you've done a few renewals. We'll go. But does this ever come up when you're talking about a renewal, this issue of, have you done long, like, nth renewal and...
I mean, no, I think it generally is the strength. I mean, I could imagine a situation in which a group is doing similar things and pumping out really useful information that is picked up by different groups every time, but still is doing the same. You could view that they're still doing the same thing, but they're doing it at an incredibly excellent and innovative
value. That's kind of what I was talking about before.
But they themselves are not then pushing it to the next. Well, presumably, they either don't have the expertise or they can't accumulate that expertise shortly, and others can. And so I think.
And that those
that's
don't get funded.
Yeah.
The ones you just described usually don't get renewed.
What, the ones that
they are just pushing.
No, I think
they're doing the same thing.
That's why I'm not so sure that's always true, because if in fact they're all very early discovery, but kind of evolving and using new technologies and you know really pushing the envelope with respect to different areas, they themselves may not be able to then take those new discoveries to the next step, whatever level, whatever that means. Others will. But they are an incredible resource that continue to feed the early part of the pipeline. And I wouldn't say that just because they're not traveling down the pipeline themselves, that they should be cut off.
A new voice with the last comment.
Is it always the same team leader? Or if the...
Introduce yourself.
Yeah,
please.
Tommy Alain from McGill. These renewals, is it always the same team leader? Or if the team leader changes, you just cannot renew? That could be the option. So if it changes, it should be a new application instead of a renewal in that case. That could be the option.
In our case, the team remains.
It's evolution. Right?
And the goals, although they're modified, remain.
And in fact,
we
dealt with the fact that there was a conflict of interest issue.
Yeah. So. Yeah, Morag actually could not be the leader because of the CIHR review. Let's move on to review. You've already, Bill, started to talk about this. There's certainly one issue I mentioned earlier came out is there seems to be a general consensus, I heard in at least two of the reports that the idea a single committee review all of the, do all the site visits. I can tell you we've addressed this issue. Would you rather discuss that, or she was taking a picture, or would you rather discuss that issue, or we've had a discussion and there is a plan that's been discussed. What would you rather hear the plan and comment on that, maybe? Because I hear what you've said, Jerry. Do you want to describe
this year, which we should have done in the past, but just didn't work out. is that at least a couple, we're trying to create what is an ACOR group. ACOR, as you recall, back in the good old days when NCI existed, but
I won't. Yeah, people of ACOR right now.
But I won't. Yeah, but I won't go there.
That's right.
I know. Anyway, there was a
three of us.
Yeah, there was a no, but you're on it now, right? Yeah. So you understand the pain. So the idea is that this is a group that could. In an objective fashion.
Can you be heard?
I think so. This was a group that in an objective fashion could look at the results of all the reviews that may have taken place over a variety of different programs and try and make the very difficult comparisons of apples and oranges, at least to be able to assess quality. What you're suggesting is if one panel, if you will, does all the site visits, that would certainly do that. But boy, it would be very difficult to get the expertise. What we're going to do this time, and I'd like your comment on it, is to at least have a couple of members of the ACOR group go to every visit, recognizing that every site visit will have a different set of experts. But at least there'll be some calibration with the folks from this ACOR group being present at every application, even though they may not themselves have all the technical expertise to understand everything to the same depth, but at least they'll be hearing the same conversations and then get back together so that there can be, I mean, it would be nice to be able to afford enough to be able to fund every excellent application. That's not going to happen. So it will at least give some calibration for balance as the various site visit teams report into that group. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Do you think that would be good enough? I mean, you can imagine
we used to
get a committee. Could you get one to do six site visits? The chair would be on all of them, so there would at least be one person who's been at all of them, and then, pardon, two chairs. Okay.
No, two members of the ACOR.
Well, you will be at them all.
I'll be at them all. Yeah.
And there will be at least one other member who's been on multiple, like two or three of the others. So at least there can be some. I mean, you mentioned that the old days at NCIC, the panel chairs used to come in and present to ACOR, and there'd be a... Oh, so I think you're trying to recapture a bit of that.
But it's still happening, by the way, but on the phone. But it's still very happening.
Review process with CHR right now. I mean,
I agree.
Grants that shouldn't be going down the tubes because there's not parity between the panels within CHR.
I don't need it. That's for the record. But we made sure to say that.
Yeah. So are you?
That's from experience.
It seems to me only two, though, is not perhaps what we were thinking about. We were thinking at one point to the extreme where the same committee review everyone. It has to be a very broad knowledge and diversity, which is a bit difficult. And I think what more reasonable would be kind of a half of the committee, if possible, to be staying there. The ACOR that you're talking about, if you look at the ACOR now, and it was in the past, is very... diverse group of people, and with all the comments we made, there are a lot of nice people trying their best to make this go forward. And I think a core ideas, an advisory committee which represent the people that are the constituency for Terry Fox on the research side, I think would be very, very helpful, and will be different than for the two programs, obviously. So another thing, though, I want to follow on this is that one issue we had in the two slides that every team is treated the same way in the sense that everybody is reviewed. And I'd like a precision from your part that some team in the past and this competition were not site visited, other were. So I'm not sure if that's true or not, but perhaps just to clarify that. If it was the case, definitely we would like that everybody treated the same way and there's some transparency across the country.
The way that it had worked is that there was a letter of intent stage, and those that passed that stage, and we recognized, I mean, we're being realistic, applications are not easy things to put together. We recognized that putting everybody to the same amount of work and putting an application together where there was, I'll make up the numbers, but it's close. If there were 20 letters of intent, and we knew we were only going to have a couple that we could fund, asking 20 people to put full applications in and site visits and all that sort of thing is not reasonable. So we picked from the letter of intent stage, and it was well articulated at the time, that that it was that this was the break point of whether you went to a full application or not.
So we picked about five or six.
And those are all site visits.
And what we're talking about right now is the CIHR process that's happening this year that happened last year.
Jerry and I both participated.
Would you like to see us move forward with this same general pattern of review? That's the issue. LOI, triage, full application, site visit.
So CIHR this year.
I'm sorry.
Karen. Go ahead.
The full applications will be reviewed by teleconference this year. And if indeed an application is seen in that teleconference, like in any panel, to be flawed, it could be triaged, so that there may not be a site visit.
So you could have a triage of a full application.
You could, if in fact there's some major changes, but that will be after obviously expert review by the panel and teleconference.
There may be an exception, but it has the to see a transparency, and I think Stephen has worked very hard through the years to make sure that happens at Perry Fox. I think teams have to be treated the same way. That's for sure. So that's our look. No small comments, but important.
I was just going to add before Jerry interrupted me.
That
a difference between this year's CIHR process and last year's is having continuity of a couple of the members of the review team participating in all of the site visits. Last year, the site visits were completely different groups. This year, Jerry as chair.
This is welcome.
And hopefully we'll do it even better. And what we're trying to figure out now is what do we do when we take responsibility for it on the TFRI side.
Right. And especially more difficult if you have out-of-Canada reviewers. Yeah. Then it's become quite difficult for some people to be there at all these reviews. So I know it's a real challenge.
Well, the out-of-Canada may be only on one. If it was the right person for that review,
out of Canada, because the Canadian applicant at this level is often the best person or group of people in the country in that particular field.
It's tough to review oncolytic viruses.
Well, that's a good example, but it often happens.
The person, the scientist, or scientist with MS, will be more better placed to evaluate, as Ben again earlier mentioned, the quality and the level of the science. And not necessarily for the process and the, who's there and what they've done in the past. So.
I mean, in fact, having that core group of ACOR is also important for outside reviewers to understand the context
of
Canadian funding. So that's another critical reason to have that core within the review.
Arnim had passed the microphone back.
Yeah, so on the slide from Dr. Ling, it was shown that the last step was normalization. I don't know what that is. Could you somebody explain that step?
I think that's what I was talking about with calibration, in the sense that when you have very different groups, if you want to compare, what Bill was talking about with breast cancer to what metabolomics, how do you compare those two? They're totally different kinds of areas, and so what we try to do then is to have a discussion with the ACOR group has a discussion with the various site visit chairs to try and measure kind of when one says this is truly excellent, what does that really mean? And it's imperfect, I know, but it's at least an attempt to try and make a calibration or a comparison between two somewhat diverse programs.
And those types of comparisons are amazingly verbal rather than numeric, are amazingly accurate, actually.
They
seem to be, anyway. There certainly is a general consensus. You get an element of excellence that you don't get out of a number, actually. At least that was my experience, Vic, I think, as well.
The reverse site visit.
Yeah.
I think it would be very, very important to maintain an actual committee coming to the place where the Terry Fox is going to be considered. Because one important aspect is to be able to take them around, and if added value is the cores, you want to be able to see that firsthand in terms of, are they set up, are they functioning the way that they've been described to be functioning, and really get a chance to walk through it and see with the committee's own eyes that, you know, everything is in place, it's functioning, and so having a reverse site visit, you would lose that aspect of it. So I would urge to maintain.
Core facilities were to really the glue to all these programs, and I suspect the three were not, I think they're probably pretty typical. Yeah, so
if,
I think seeing that,
cores
seeing
are
that,
emerging, you've got to go there.
You've got to see what's going on.
Yeah, I agree.
I agree.
Any more comments about the process? So I think we're, I'd just like to make one point, is you notice the two oldest males on the panel have not had to leave the room? Okay.
Medication.
That's because of this bag I have in my pocket. Okay. Sorry. Excuse me. You're a physician, though. You should understand this stuff. All right. Oh, I know. I'll be replaced soon. So the last topic is partnership and enrichment, which we've touched on. I think the idea of demanding partnering money is not, is that generally not popular? It should not be a criterion, because we mentioned that. But otherwise, the value of enrichment and so on, these issues. Any comments? What kind of places are there available to go to for this kind of partnering? I mean, there are all Canadian Cancer Research Alliance has 30 funding agencies that are kind of supposedly available for partnering. Are these the places to go? Are there innovative places to go? Any ideas, Peter?
So is this being looked at from the standpoint of the Terry Fox, in terms of, we have our own Quebec Breast Cancer Foundation, you know, there's there'll be provincial counterparts all the way across. And if this was something that was taken on from the top down in terms of not evaluating a grant coming to the to be reviewed and that they've secured their own money, but rather, you know, trying to go from a top down, bring in these partners, and that there may be opportunities to augment a large comprehensive program in a particular area that lines with a funding initiative or their own research interest. So do you have a sense of, maybe you could tell us where you're at with that sort of an idea? Like, so rather than having it with the applicants coming with their own extra pot of money, but what's being done maybe in terms of bridging and reaching out to these other funding partners? Because there's two ways of looking at it.
So I think there's a few ways of looking at this problem or this question. I think most of the people in the room are really your opinion leaders in this province. You are. You're the top scientists in this province. And, you know, all the funding agencies in this province are asking your opinion as where should they put their money, in some cases, not all cases. And so often I think people think, oh, well, you know, since the money is raised in Quebec or in Alberta or in Ontario, we want to spend it in those provinces. And that's fair enough. But on the other hand, what we're suggesting is that if you folks were to voice to the funding agency within your province, and you say that PPG is really the great program, you know, if we were able to compete for this, because this is a national with international peer review and everything else, the creme de la creme, isn't that a better place to put your money than simply a competition within the province in itself? I mean, I'm just putting that out there. It may have more impact. If you guys could make that kind of statement to potential co-funders, then when people like Stephen and myself were to talk to these people, they would have it more receptive. Otherwise, they're always worrying about, well, what about our people within our own provinces? Are they going to suffer? That's what they worry about, I think, quite often. So that's from one perspective only.
Another way of stating that is, could Terry Fox be helpful or more helpful in helping you partner with people for a proposal? I'm not sure. You can certainly use the fact that you're applying for a Terry Fox. We could provide you probably with a package of why this is so prestigious. That would at least help you. You know, we could put that together, actually, the kind of things you just stated. Creme de la creme, you know, the level of competition, quality, and so on. Maybe it would help you going to donors or agencies or, I don't know. I mean, I could just, in the Goodman context, possibly. I don't know. Any other comments about partnering? I mean, there are partners. We tried to get Quebec on board. It's often difficult in Quebec. Ontario, OICR has been a partner. In BC, is the BCCA a partner? They actually put money into it? They don't. I didn't think so. Not in this program, but yeah. Oh, in the translational they do, though.
So just to be clear,
yeah, in the translation.
There are no current co-funders of the
PPGs. That's right.
There's none right now.
Okay.
There are co-funders of the new Investigate program, and of course our translational program is multi-partnered.
But, you know, Terry Fox could help with a CFI application, I would think. This is not government money. If you were making it...
CFI, you have to have a partnership from the government. You have to have another partner coming in. Is Terry Fox would be that partner? I doubt. You would not put money into equipment.
Well,
it would be...
No, you don't
need...
The partner doesn't have to be government.
Well, in Quebec, it is automatically almost...
Oh, for
CFI?
Yes.
For CFI.
It doesn't have to be. I mean, it's...
Probably. I'm not sure about that, but I don't know any project which... John, do you know? Yeah, I think it's the government of Quebec that always match the money.
But it doesn't have to be.
It doesn't have to be, though. If you had
probably
from a foundation.
Yeah.
I mean, the institution gets an allocation from CFI, so yeah. You can't go over that. But CFI only provides 40 cents on the dollar, and I think the other...
You may be right. I'm not sure about Quebec. But I still think it would be nice that other fresh money comes in. I'm not sure this will be a créneau that... a niche that normally you're not doing for equipment purposes like CFI. I'm not sure this would be an advancement to the program. You would be sucking up money from your grants towards infrastructure.
Let me turn that idea around. Is it possible that TFRI could approach CFI, given that core facilities are such a key piece of these programs, that they could encourage CFI to invest in successful PPGs,
and
thereby spare PPG money
That's
and allow it to go
idea.
Further. Right. Is it possible?
Because the easiest way to get the core facility, you know, if you want partners, it would be to have partners that funds the core facilities. And they are the same clientele for CFI, in fact, better, because
right.
not only
national,
this, you come up with the grants that comes with it, you know, right. to operate. Right. So I think this is something we talked, but the way you stating
CFI,
it is very nice.
Plus CFI comes with an infrastructure operating fund, which could further enhance the ability of the cores to function if it was
there. In your innovation, too. So if you establish the core that...
Yeah.
There's something else that
you
brought into that
core
in terms of infrastructure.
I'm sure Vic will work that
out. They already do, in principle, they already sort of do that with the chairs, right? CFI. Don't they match with somebody?
If you get a CRC, there's a CFI component to it.
So it's not a totally new idea.
Except that's all government. But
yeah.
And it's time limited.
But it's a different, and it is a different agency, though. So,
but maybe they'd be open to this.
Yeah. I mean, it's worth an approach.
And again, you know, people on the ground, excellent people like yourself, say this is a good idea. Then, you know, the organization like CFI or whatever other organization will be more receptive.
Be a good way to increase the national impact of the course as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, actually, that could be an add-on even. CFI could be an add-on for broader impact, which is one of the goals we have anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a major challenge with CFI. You know, you get an operating grant for like 3 years,
and then it stops.
Yep.
And you have all this infrastructure, and then now you have to see operating funds.
So you might be able to sell it to CFI as a way of sustaining the legacy investment that they've made in the facility. They can.
Absolutely.
If you look at the, at least in the clinical settings or biomedical research, a lot of the people you're funding
across the country are major recipient of CFIs.
Absolutely. Just the metabolomic, I think it was a total two or three CFIs to build that, not counting all the work that they've done on the breast cancer. So, and that's the same thing at the NSU La Cherche Clinic, where Jean is. So there's a very interesting match of science and infrastructure here for cancer.
Those buildings were in place probably before you got the TFRI grant. I mean, it probably helped to get the TFRI grant that you had access to this infrastructure.
Yeah.
The problem is trying to do it the other way around.
Anything else about partnerships? Anything else about anything?
Maybe the thought of actually trying to reach out into an international forum, do partnership with some of the agencies in the United States, Stand Up for Cancer, for example, the big fundraising organizations in the States. That would be, I think, or the Coleman Foundation. There are a number of situated international funding agencies that would be potentially interested in partnership.
Would they? Yeah, no, but I'm just trying to think how it would work.
There were American U.S. based.
Some of them would anyway. Yeah. That's true.
But that might enhance the research.
In some cases, those links already exist.
Yeah.
Are we talked out? Armin.
one question. So it happens that we only have a few big cities in Canada, and so therefore we have several teams in one city. And if they all want to renew their team grants, what's your advice? Should we all stay separate? Should we team up? Like how do you see this? Like, let's say next time all the money goes to one city, is that feasible, or is that what you call normalization?
Well, one of the problems with all teaming up is that at the moment the grant is capped unless you have a way of enhancing it by getting partnerships. In fact, the cap was set probably 20 years ago back at NCIC and hasn't changed since.
And there's no regional discrimination, so it's not like you can only get one from Montreal. I mean, it's all based on quality of the program, so you could have everything be in Montreal or Toronto or
maybe more.
So I have a general question with respect to how the Terry Fox program grants anticipate growth of certain groups. So the Oncolytic Virus Consortium, for example, is growing. New investigators like Rebecca are adding on, but the funds stay the same. So how is there a mechanism? Yes, she did. She did. But next time around when she's part of the group and we're all applying together, and now there are 15, 20 investigators maybe, how do we deal with that growth? I mean, the idea is to build networks, but if those networks grow, how does the funding grow with the network? That's where partnerships
are. And also, we're facing a harsh reality. We have more excellent groups than we have money to fund. And so we're talking about limiting, but the idea came up is there ought to be some, if we limit them to a million, let's say, there ought to be a possibility at least of being larger in a situation like you just described. You should be able to make an argument for that.
And what about potential continuation of new investigator grants as sort of a way to, keep adding on in parallel?
to this these programs. Yeah, fair enough, but you know, you see what I mean.
Yeah.
No, no, but you know, kind of anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what they're for.
Yeah. Anyhow.
Are you happy what you heard today, Daryl?
You know, similar to Terry's journey back in 1980, the PPGs have been on their own journey over the last two-plus decades, so we value them obviously immensely and the contribution they have made. So I thank you. I also want to thank the NCIC, the former NCIC, obviously, in terms of their stewardship and the creation of this particular program. And obviously, Jerry and Carol played a key role back then. So,
how about me?
And also Phil as well. And more recently, obviously, CHR for assisting. But I'm glad they're now home. And I look forward to what the future holds as well. And we really want, as we heard earlier, we really want to build this program. We see the value of it. And so to hear input that you feel that that's warranted is also of considerable interest and importance to us. So thank you.
Thanks, Daryl. You've always been a very important part of this process, so thank you. I think we're done. This is the first of three of the... This is kind of like being on all site visits, Jerry. We're on the... This is the first one, and we're all going to be on all three. Thanks a lot. I'd like to thank the people online. Il y a des collègues de Québec, je sais, Dr. Huot. J'espère que lui ou ses collègues sont en ligne. And anyone else who's online, and I think this is available for later viewing if you wish. I want to thank the Goodman, Peter, and his staff have been very, very helpful in pulling this off, especially Lena, who you know, and Petal, and Duncan. Duncan had coffee for us at 8:30 this morning, which was greatly appreciated. Pardon? Yeah. Well, that's why it's the same one. That's why I haven't been out of the room. Stuart McCombie and the McGill AV team for their support. Stuart is one of you back there. There you go. And anyone, as I said, watching online, this is the address. If you want, you're welcome to send in any written comments. We will certainly incorporate those slides, one each, from your presentations where you had suggestions. I think we've recaptured those to some extent in our in your comments. And thanks very much. Thank you for the warm day here. It has been minus 40 last week, so this was a nice little thing for our visitors. And, well, I'll see all of you next week at work.
And thank you for coming to my house.
Okay.
Very appreciated.